The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS NFL Podcast. I'm Katie Mox, here with Will Brinson, and today Brady Quinn joins the show. Well, we will discuss OTA's new rules, the Commanders' deal, and players gambling, and a little bit more. If you're liking the pod, show us some love. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTube page. If you're an audio listener, download, follow, leave a five-star review, and tell your friends to listen and watch the pod. I don't know if it's necessarily breaking news, guys, but I was watching SportsCenter, and apparently OTAs are going on so far. Aaron Rodgers has perfect attendance in New York, something we haven't seen for a while. But while he was working out with the other quarterbacks, he seemed to have hurt his ankle. Doesn't appear to be too serious, but he is no longer practicing today. Thoughts on this, Brady?
It's early, so I don't think there's anything too much to be concerned about. You can see him out there on the field. He is walking around. It wasn't like they took him off on a stretcher or something, and he's there talking to his boy, his buddy, Nathaniel Hackett. So a little bit of cause for concern if you're the Jets, only because this is the reality. He is older. You run more of an injury risk with an older player, quarterback probably more so. But, you know, again, it's still early in the year. And I think if you're a Jets fan and you're like, see, this is why we should have went and got him. You know, I'm sorry, I'm trying to work. This is why we should have went and got him. Shouldn't have went and gotten him. Sorry, you sometimes when you're talking really fast.
Should have went and got him. I don't know what's out there.
I thought that was your Brinson voice.
It was my Brinson voice. And so
I think the win and got him part is what confused everybody, including myself, even hearing myself talking.
That would be the concern for those Jets fans who are like, why do we give up what we gave up to get him? You know, all that. Okay, look, here's the reality. Robert Saleh said this today. There's about 6 to 8 teams that have a legitimate shot at winning a Super Bowl this year right now when you look at the rosters. The Jets are one of them, and he's right.
Yeah.
And it's because they have Aaron Rodgers. If you don't take that risk, then you're not one of those 6 to 8 teams. And so the rest of the leagues can talk about it, but the truth of the matter is, unless it's Mahomes, Rodgers, Allen, Burrow, Jackson, you know, unless those are your quarterbacks, you probably really don't have a shot.
Bring that video of Aaron Rodgers back up real quick. And now scroll to the right, please. Not down, to the right. That's what we're looking for. What's that trending? What's that number one trending topic? Is that Zach Wilson? That is indeed Zach Wilson trending there, which if you're watching on YouTube, you don't really need to be because you could be listening to us say Zach Wilson, tell you that Zach Wilson is trending. The visual, but thank you for the visual. That was helpful. I think that this is not a situation where it's like, oh, I shouldn't have went and got him. It's, do you like that?
what is it, Will? Tell us.
it simply speaks to the fragility of NFL seasons, particularly when you have a heavy investment in an older quarterback. Yeah. And like, that's, that's just the reality of the matter. That, you know, this applied to Tom Brady the last few years. This applies to Russell Wilson and the Broncos last year. It applies to Russell Wilson and the Broncos this year. You can make a good trade, a trade that is objectively an intelligent maneuver, and it can still end up poorly for you. Like the Browns went and got Deshaun Watson. Probably a good trade from a, just a vacuum perspective.
What did you say?
What's that?
Deshaun Watson. Okay, sorry.
Deshaun Watson. Yes.
I was just
They like anytime you go out and trade a lot of assets for a veteran quarterback, you run. I mean, you're just running the risk because you make the line that you have to walk a little bit tighter in terms of how you're going to perform this season. Now, this is not me saying that the Jets should have done it. They your point correct is 100% correct, Brady. They are one of the few teams. What, 8-10 teams?
I don't think there's 10. I think we're going to stop at 8. I mean, if we're talking about who would legitimately have a shot, where we know this year, like the handful of teams you could throw in the AFC.
Let's say Bills, Jets, Bengals, Ravens.
Chiefs?
I'm just going through the divisions.
49ers?
Okay, guys, I'm clearly starting in the AFC and working my way down through the AFC. Chiefs, relax. Jaguars, yes or no?
I mean, legitimate shot. I don't know that I'm throwing that category. Okay. Yeah,
right, that's fine. That's fine. Chiefs, yes, obviously. Chargers, I say no. Broncos, no.
No, I mean, all those teams fall in that next tier of like.
Agreed. Right? Agreed. Eagles, yes. Vikings, Lions, Packers, Bears, no. Bucks, Panthers, Saints, Falcons, no. And Niners. So you have six teams that are like, and the Niners, like, we need to see it with the quarterback too.
Yeah.
But just given the NFC, NFC, like, we got to have two teams in the NFC that can win the Super Bowl, right? Right?
I'm telling you, if the NFL really want to start tweaking things to make it interesting, just reseed. I know the NBA talked about doing it, but like re-rack. Like, let's just forget about the conferences once we get there. I know no one's going to buy into this, but it would actually equate to finding out.
Fun.
Well, you would say like that's the one true team to win it, right? Where sometimes we look at the AFC Championship game, we go, maybe that was the better of the two games. So,
wow. Do you agree with Captain Spock that the Jets took a chance on the biggest playoff choke artist in NFL history?
I mean, he's got a Super Bowl. So
I see.
I'll tell you what, he hadn't won a Super Bowl since he won a Super Bowl, though.
That is true. And when you count up the rest of the Super Bowls the Jets have won, you kind of go, all right, maybe they've got a better shot than people realize. So
yeah, no, I agree that the Jets are in that mix because of Rodgers. Coming out of the AFC makes it tough. The point for me is just that he's an older quarterback. He's playing on a field that's had some injury history before. He's playing in a new place with new trainers, whole new – just there's a lot of changes, and that can – it can be difficult to walk that tightrope sometimes. And for Rodgers.
Notice how Billy always seems to get in the Eagles fans post.
Very surprised. You could write Eagles fart.
The Eagles
all too, and like it would get posted.
Exactly. The Eagles were part of that group. And we also included San Francisco. And it really isn't. I mean, now you'd say it's Jalen Hurts and that roster. But you would have said last year is because the roster was that good. And I think the Eagles, we've made that case, and not to upset Eagles fans, but if you don't think they have an easier path through the NFC, out of your mind. Like you're lying to yourself. You probably have unrealistic thoughts about a lot of other things in life if you don't think it's an easier path. When we just listed out the teams that you've got to go through in the AFC versus the NFC, like San Francisco.
Does anybody think differently?
I don't know. That guy probably
don't even go there. Yes, they do.
This is not an Eagles podcast. I mean, it's like the Eagles have already won the NFC. Congratulations. You're in the Super Bowl.
Let's see who you play. That's your job. All right. Tell them to go back to work and what they're doing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right. So let's move on from the Eagles and unfortunately get into some more somber news. Brown's legendary fullback, civil rights activist and actor Jim Brown unfortunately passed away last week. Brady, as an Ohio native and a member of the Cleveland Browns fraternity of players, what did Jim Brown mean to you?
Well, I got to know Jim Brown. You know, he was there heavily involved with the Browns organization my first couple of years. He would always be around Berea, where the facility is there near Cleveland. And I mean, first off, he was one of the greatest athletes. Forget football for a second.
Maybe the greatest athlete of all time.
Thank you for cutting me off and not letting me get to that point, Will. But yes, maybe the greatest athlete of all time. You could put him into that category. but it really was just more of his presence. He had such a quiet presence about him. And yeah, some of that could have to do with the fact of how old he was at that point in time, but I just got the sense that that was more of his style. And whenever he spoke, you know, everyone turned and listened. Like, he was just that kind of personality, that person that carried so much with him from his experience. And he obviously had a vast experience of doing things outside of the sports world. You know, we talk about civil rights, talk about acting, everything else, even just from business perspective, understanding branding and marketing, and just talking to you about, you know, your image, especially being drafted to Cleveland as a first round pick. So he lent a ton of advice. I would call him a mentor for sure. And I think the toughest part for him was seeing a team that when he was a part of it had so much success, and he was a part of that success. And then seeing a team that when they decided to come back as an expansion team could never really find that identity that I think he knew and that he brought to the team. And so that was probably the toughest thing I think for him to try to be a part of and witness is it was just so much turnover. There was so much adversity, so many other things. He was always that voice of reason, the voice of sanity to me, where if I was having anything I was struggling with, you just go talk to Mr. Brown and he would give you some timely advice and really help get shape and give you perspective to how you really needed to look at things. So I was incredibly sad to hear the news. Just a tremendous human being. And obviously always a compliment, you're well documented. So really, really sad to hear of this.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the greatest athlete of all time. I think he won 8 rushing titles. Is that right? The only time I ever interacted with Jim Brown, because I didn't play for the Cleveland Browns, was actually at I did not. He'd been at Houston. Was it at a Super Bowl party? It was the Audi Super Bowl party. And I was walking down the hallway and Jim Brown's coming the other way with like 2 security guards. I was like, "Hey, hi, Jim. I'm sure I can remember saying Mr. Brown or Jim." He goes, "What's up, dog?" And put out his fist. And I was like, "Oh my God, he's the coolest human being alive." Good gravy. Of course, no one can forget his memorable role in Mars Attacks as well. Yes. As one of the, he's in a ton of movies. He's a legitimate actor.
Any Given Sunday. I mean, that role, I was like, all right, that's the badass that like I would want as a coach, especially on that side of the ball. So he's got some really quotable lines in that one. But I mean, and that's the thing is it was crazy to think like he decided to stop his career short. You know, he you know, obviously had a disagreement with Art Modell. And I believe at 29 years old, he decided to hang it up. And he probably still had plenty more that he could have, you know, given to the game at that point in time, but he segued into other interests. And like, you could almost look at him as a Renaissance man with all the different things he had his hand in on. So again, just a tremendous human being. Obviously the NFL lost a great.
Yeah. And I mean, I think too, like, I'm not saying that anybody should sign for any certain number of years that you're on this earth because you want to max it out as much as possible. But if you make the Pro Football Hall of Fame and you play for, I believe he played for what, 9 years, led the league in rushing 8 times from 1957 to 1965. Like, if you lived to be 87 and you had that kind of career and you carried the ball over like almost 2,400 times in the NFL in the 50s and 60s, you lived a very long and fruitful life, you know, like, and an activist, in what he did off the field and what it meant so much. I mean, one of the all-time greats. No brainer Hall of Famer, 3-time MVP, Rookie of the Year. I think multiple all decades team won a NFL championship as well. All 1960s team.
Certainly someone who will be missed and had a huge impact on and off the field. So rest in peace, Jim Brown. Let's now talk about some new rules in the NFL that have passed. My favorite one is NFL owners passed a bylaw that allows teams to have a third quarterback in uniform on game days. This, of course, on the heels of the NFC Championship game debacle. Brady, why is this best for all quarterbacks?
It's really the high tide that raises all boats, especially for quarterbacks. And the reason being is the rule never should have went away. I've never understood why they got rid of the rule. My only explanation is it was a small cost-cutting measure. Even though you're only talking about, you know, 32 positions potentially, usually a backup that would be in this third-string role is one of a couple types of quarterbacks. It's either an older, experienced veteran that, you know, you're looking at as a kind of a mentor in that room. And the reason for that is because, you know, there's limitations on how much the quarterback coach can really be with the quarterbacks. And that's in the offseason, obviously, there's rules within the CBA against that. And then once you get into the season, it's primarily game planning and everything else. And the quarterback coach is not so much geared towards development. He's geared towards, you know, trying to help the team win. And so he's more focused week to week on the schematic game planning that's involved in that. And so you need kind of have that veteran presence that's in the room. So if the quarterback who's starting isn't that, a lot of times you look at kind of that third string guy as a guy that can come in, potentially, you know, get you out of a game, get you out of a bind, but it is more of that just steady veteran presence. And that might come with a little higher cost. And maybe they'd say, hey, we'd rather use that on a different position. We'll stash, you know, a developmental guy on the practice squad, give us an extra arm there. I know some of those rules were changed for the practice squad eligibility due to COVID. But I think through COVID, because that rule was taken out and subsequently two CBAs ago, they might have rethought that and said, this is actually something that we really need. We've got a shortened offseason. We don't get development much more with many positions anymore. And quarterback is such a unique position that is such a developmental spot where you need to have some sort of veteran presence in there at times. And then the last thing is you can get some guys who are just really raw, and they're guys that might need more time to develop. And so if they are on the younger side of things, because you've got an older veteran guy who is in that starting role, you've got a couple of guys, one that could be your backup that's ready, that knows the system, and one that might be young and might be extremely raw, but has a ton of upside, and you'd like to give them the chance to practice and be a part of everything, especially when you travel with the team and so forth. Those practice squad guys are usually not traveling with the team, not staying at the hotel, not a part of all the weekend festivities from time to time. And so all those sorts of things become a little bit more important. But so this is good for the league. I mean, when you think about it, the fact that the league got rid of it in the first place, they basically were like only hurting themselves the potential chance of not allowing more faces of these franchises to be developed or to have the sort of coaching and resources that they ultimately need. So I love this for the NFL. And I love the fact that you basically provided almost a guaranteed more 32 more jobs in the NFL for all those third string quarterbacks that got wiped out.
Hey, Brady, if you were a coach in the NFL, yeah, I think you should be. I think you should be a head coach in the NFL. I think you could do it right now.
He's a girls soccer coach right now.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm on the defensive side of the ball there. I'll be honest with you. I'm really liking it, all right? The physicality of it. I've got my girls literally just knocking people over, taking people off. I haven't gotten to slide tackling yet, but so far a lot of chicken winging, you know, to make sure they hit the ball. And I tell them, if you kick for the ball and you miss and you haven't hit someone else,
get a shin.
That's okay.
Yep. Contact the shin and then you'll be fine. Yeah. Don't really do that, kids. But I'm curious, if you were designated, so like let's say you're coaching the 49ers, right? And that's because this is the team that we're talking about, right? You have Trey Lance. I guess the Niners already have their guy in Sam Darnold as their third emergency quarterback, right?
Yep.
I guess I'm sort of wondering, would you want to have a quarterback who fits, you know, because a lot of times we talk about, you know, you have a backup that is similar to the starter, so he can slide right in and you don't have to change up a lot of things. I almost think, like, if you get to the playoffs, this is, I guess, the way I'm trying to ask the question. If you get to the playoffs, would it behoove, do you think we'll see some coaches say, all right, we're going to have this, like, totally random, not random offense, but like maybe like a read option style offense with our third emergency quarterback, that if we're forced to go to this guy in a playoff situation, break glass and pull out something that the defense isn't expecting at all. You know, I mean, do you think we'll see like maneuvering like that in terms of the playoffs and stuff and how coaches will approach it?
100%. I mean, if I was a team, right, and I've got a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, and they've done this essentially. I mean, Tyler Huntley has a similar skill set. He's not as dynamic, but when you look at the other quarterbacks they've brought in, Anthony Brown too, started for him last year, all those guys can run that system. Maybe not like Lamar, but similar in nature. So I think you might see some more teams that are more apt to want to do that. So that's part of it. I mean, and people should understand the mechanics of it too. The way it's written in there and how people define it, they're like, well, the first and second string quarterbacks, you know, can't come back into the game in order to – that's actually not really how it works in essence. This actually happened my rookie year on my first game that I was ever a part of the Browns. I was inactive at that point in time. Charlie Fry was our starter. Derek Anderson was the backup. And at one point in time, they activated me and Charlie Fry at that point in time ended up getting traded the following week. But I'd been activated because of that. And at that point in time, he just couldn't go back into the game. Usually it is due to injury where they'll deactivate that player. But usually when the first quarterback gets hurt and they determine that he can't go back in, that's the point at which they activate the third string quarterback. He's already sitting there in his uniform, but there's literally like a piece of paper. You deactivate the one player, you activate the other, and you like submit it into the officials. So I'll never forget Rip Shear, my quarterback coach, like grabbing that and doing it and kind of talking me through all that. And I was just like super excited, because when you're sitting there in uniform and like you're not actually active, you're kind of like, all right, this feels kind of stupid. Now, when you know you've got the chance to go in and play, it feels a lot different when you're out there.
That makes sense. I want to bring up something that Captain Spock said in the chat here. What are Brady's thoughts on Trey Lance working out with Jeff Christensen and Patrick Mahomes? A lot of positive development coming out in the media about Trey Lance and his arm fatigue. They seem to work that out. So what are your thoughts on Trey Lance right now?
Yeah, so Patrick has worked with Jeff Christensen for quite some while. He's one of the various quarterback coaches that you'll see people out there working with. There's a lot of good quarterback coaches out there at this point in time in their career. This isn't to take anything away from, you know, Tom House or Jeff Christensen or anyone else, but the majority of what they're working with, these guys are fine-tuning and tweaking things, right? Like Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes because of his talent and ability. It's not necessarily like some of what they're working with now, right? And Mahomes didn't really get with Jeff Christensen until once he got into the NFL. So, you know, sometimes we throw around names or like, oh, this is it. Like, this is going to change everything. The thing that Trey Lance needs the most, and you can work on those sorts of mechanics. I mean, I remember being a part of a Broncos team with Tim Tebow. And I remember after year, and then even as we both went our separate ways, and he was trying to come back to him, and I was rehabbing from a back injury and having to be out in Southern California, you know, with Tom House, with Adam Dato and those guys. You know, Tim was out there throwing, and they're like, hey, we fixed it, we got it. And I was just like, not really, because once you get into live game scenario, you always resort back to your greatest form of training. And it's really, really hard to be able to like totally change your throwing mechanics at that point in time in your career. I mean, you have not thousands, like probably hundreds of thousands of reps that you've taken throughout your life to develop into this throwing motion. And so you're more tweaking, fine tuning some things, and you've really got to take an approach where it's almost like block training. You're working on one specific part of the motion, and you drill it, you drill it, you drill it, you drill it. It's the most boring thing in the world. And then you hope to add on another small little tweak, and you drill and drill and drill it. And then you hope, and then you eventually build all those together, right, through a sequence of doing these exercises thousands of times. And that's your only thing you're looking at. You're not like, you don't even want to do some of the drills that you're doing throwing to a moving target, because you'll automatically revert back to what your moving target's doing. And so you'll adjust your throw, your body, whatever you're working on, you'll adjust it to make the throw instead of trying to hone in on what you're trying to change in your motion. So it's really hard when you're talking about, you know, throwing motion changes to make it at this point in time in their life. Hopefully Trey Lance has enough time in the offseason to just focus on that and not worry about, you know, learning a playbook and other stuff, because he's been there. So he should know it by now. But you know, you hope that once the live tape comes on, all the things that he's practicing now and he's working on, those translate to the game. But until you get there, it's really hard to create that realistic scenario to know how he's going to react.
Yeah. I mean, well, what about the arm fatigue situation, and that they seem to have fixed that? He no longer is getting the arm fatigue that he was getting, which was a huge concern last year. Is that,
I mean, it could be somewhat biomechanical. It could be somewhat just the amount of reps that you take as an NFL player versus college. The season is longer. You know, the amount of practicing, the throwing that you're doing is even more so than you've ever done before. All those things add up over time. So It could be a byproduct of a number of things. You know, people always, again, try to say that, hey, it's because of their mechanics, these changes they fixed. Sure. Like if you change the way your arm slot and you have it a little bit lower and you're more of a rotational thrower instead of being over the top, you're probably going to have a little less torque on your elbow. Now, you ask anyone who is a golfer. We've got apparently a pro disc golfer in our chat. sort of rotational sport like that, you're changing the torque from one area of the body to the other. And so then lower back becomes something that you start to be more concerned with depending on the mechanics. So, you know, you could talk about whatever you want. You know, he's got to come up with a better probably maintenance program, you know, pre-habilitation, post-habilitation, rehabilitation as far as what he's doing. It's also condition and strength and all those little muscles. That's also part of it too. I don't know that he knew all that stuff when he was in college or until he got to the NFL.
Yeah. All right. There is one more rule change as well. The NFL passed a new rule instituting that all fair catches and touchbacks come out to the 25-yard line on kickoffs. It's the same rule as college. The thought is it would make things safer, though special teams coaches around the league oppose the change. Brady, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think they're just trying to incentivize, you know, less kickoff returns because special teams plays have always been, higher probability of getting a concussion. And so when the NFL looks at rule changes for the sake of player safety, this is one of the things that they'll champion and they'll tout like, oh, look, there's less, you know, we've changed tackling, we've changed the helmets, we've done all this. It's like, well, when you do multiple things, it's hard then to get a feel for what exactly is the root cause or what exactly, you know, is the byproduct of that change. You're probably going to be incentivizing some teams not to return it altogether because of the fair catch. A lot of teams have taken the approach of trying to do more of like a mortar style kick to put a lot of height on it and try to tackle them inside that, you know, 25 yard line. So then they steal a few more yards. And just not to get into the whole data and analytical nerdy part, but a lot of coaches have all these on where your starting drive starts and the percentage probability of scoring a touchdown, right? So if you can find a way of stealing, you know, 5 to 10 yards, that's huge, right? That's one less third down you've got to worry about if you're starting the 15 as opposed to 25. So there's all those different kind of schematical ways teams will try to go about doing it.
No, I mean, look, it's I think Ian Rappaport reported that like basically every special teams coach in the league didn't like the idea. A lot of coaches didn't like it. Roger Goodell really wanted to do it.
They're going to be out of a job shortly if they keep these rules to a point. So I'm sure no one really likes it.
Right. I mean, that's why kickers don't, you know, it's not surprising. You know, if they're like podcasting is illegal, we'd be like, yo, whoa, 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 chill, bro. do we want to briefly, I guess we'll take a break and we come back and cover Super Bowl and the draft.
Yes. Yes, we will do that. We are going to take a quick break, but before we get out of here, on this break, not for good. Miss some of the action while you were sleeping. Your sports day starts here. Highlights from all the top games and league. Catch up on storylines and social buzz. Jump in and jump out. Morning Buzz runs all morning starting at 9 a.m. Get it all for free on CBS Sports app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is Pick Six. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Pick Six Podcast. Katie Mox here with Will Brinson and Brady Quinn. If you're not following us on social, go ahead and do that at Pick Six Pod across all social media platforms. Brinson, I don't have that on my rundown here. So what did
you? I just figured I'd throw it out real quick. 2026 Super Bowl is going to be in San Francisco. Last time, of course, Super Bowl 50.
Hell yeah.
When the Broncos beat the Panthers. Boo. That was like the only time I really felt like a Panthers fan in the last like 10 years. I was like diehard rooting for the Panthers to win that Super Bowl. And then I was going to retire because my first draft would have been Cam Newton, and then Cam Newton wins the Super Bowl. I walk off in a blaze of glory, and yet here I am. You're stuck with me anyway. The draft is going to be held in Lambeau Field in 2025. How cool is that?
It's cool. I was going to go back to San Francisco. I'm
quite all right, Brady. Keep moving.
What? No? Can't talk about it? No?
You can talk about it, sure.
Yeah, I'm happy for Jed York, happy for the 49ers and 49ers Thank fans.
Not real thrilled about having to commute 70 miles in crap traffic every day, I'll tell you that much.
That is probably the point I was going to bring up is Santa Clara, the stadium itself, that area around it's nice. It's just tough to get in and out of. I mean, I was literally gridlocked calling a 49ers Chargers game this past year trying to get out of there. It took us an hour and a half. I mean, that area is so difficult logistically. Yes. That's not going to be fun.
But you could spend some time in the Tenderloin. Are you excited about that?
Things that you got to worry about when you're walking around there. Like, I would not walk with your head up. I'd look down. There might be some stuff on the ground you got to be careful of.
Are you discussing human poop?
45 minutes south of San Francisco. So you won't have to deal with
Brady.
No. Hold on, Katie. This is where you're wrong. Okay. All the pre-week festivities, a lot of them are up in San Francisco.
I walked through parties. A landmine field of human poop. That's in a blazer and a pink shirt. Not even kidding. We walked through the Tenderloin because we got dropped off by Uber, and you're just like, ah. I would also – so Brady and I are going to go to a cool bar when we hang out at the Super Bowl. We're going to walk through the Tenderloin at 2 in the morning like we did last time. I didn't do it. It's Pete Prisco did it.
Who got a piece of Mark Davis's pizza? I remember walking through the lobby.
That was Prisco. Prisco ate Mark Davis's pizza. Yeah.
The fact that Mark would even offer it to him, one was awesome. But I think he was sitting there with John St. Clair, who's just a gigantic human being, former offensive tackle, great guy. They were just sitting there chopping it up. I'm pretty sure we're like, oh, yeah, how you doing? And he's like, hey, you guys want some pizza? Pete's like, yeah, I'll take some pizza.
Now, the year before in Arizona at Super Bowl 49, we'd seen Mark Davis eating a plate of French fries while wearing a white jumpsuit. And every single fry, he was dipping in ketchup and just holding over the jumpsuit as he ate it. There were like 10 of us just like staring like, what are you doing, you psychopath? Just lean over the table.
He lives on the edge. Like, if you wear a jumpsuit and you're that like just loose or free with fries and ketchup, you're living on the edge, man.
You got to be worth at least $500 million. 2025 NFL draft will be hosted at Lambeau Field. I think that's just cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Are we off the whole poop maps, though? We're moving out from San Francisco. And Kitty, I promise
you. There is a homeless and a crime problem right now happening in San Francisco. But there's a couple years, so hopefully we can clean that up.
And yeah, I'm sure they'll knock that right out in the next couple of years.
But in all seriousness, you should be preparing yourself to be in downtown, not so much in Santa Clara, because that's where everything's going to be throughout the course of the week. They won't move on site until you get to like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So
we're like 2 blocks from the Tenderloin. Like, you walk 2 blocks to the left and you're just like, whoa.
I remember it was like hopscotch at times, dodging the feces, the human feces.
Absolutely.
I was like,
was there one more thing? I think that was it.
I want to say, if any of my bosses are listening, please send me to that Super Bowl. Otherwise, I will riot because I think I deserve to be there. All right, moving on to the Washington Commanders. Yes, riot.
A quiet riot.
Please send me. No? Okay, cool. Thanks. I'll guess.
Thank you. Okay, send me home.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so Washington Commanders, the deal is on track, I guess you can say, for a record-breaking $6.5 million, though issues have arisen with the structure of the agreement, specifically the Harris Group's ability to stay under the league's $1.1 billion debt limit to finance this purchase, which of course is now delaying everything, and the NFL owners have not been able to vote on it. We've got a clip, I believe, from Jim Irsay.
I'm sure his face is very close to the camera too.
You know, we'll see what happens. I think it's going to kind of depend on the Harris Group on that point. You know, I think they kind of know, you know, what the rules are. And, you know, I think I know they really want to get a deal done, and we do. So you hope that carries the day. But at this point, I can't say, you hope that it gets done. But I think, there's more work to be done at this point.
That was eloquent by Irsay.
Jim Irsay's eyes look like my dog George's eyes. It's a little wonky there.
I didn't know we were going with that one.
Which
George.
One? Do
you need that? George got astray there.
You never know. It's like, this is the left, this is the right. Do I look in between? Like, how do you handle that? I don't know.
You can cover one eye and you can like see one way, cover the other. So it's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Brady, what do we think about this?
Well, hold on. Do we have the sound from Will? Will's the one that should kick this off because he doesn't think there's any issue with this.
What did I say? I don't know. Who's to say what I said? Do we have video of me talking last week?
Yeah, who's to say? Oh, here we are.
I don't know. You got a new ownership group, I think, once this whole thing falls through.
I think we're good.
Apparently, it took on more debt than they were supposed to, and they've got a lot of minority owners involved that people are like, wait a second, we're not used to having this big of an ownership group. And
I think they kind of got cleared through the next hurdle recently in the last few days. But look, if they don't pull it off, Ryan Davis in the wings, he's fine. He'll pick up the tab. I wouldn't. Okay, was that a lot of tweet that out? Where did that clip come from? I don't think I said anything like this is done, like it's over. Nice try, Brady Quinn.
Hey, let me ask you this. What hurdle did they get past after I just laid out in that scenario what they're still at right now? Like, all those are still concerns.
No, I said that they were going to get in front of the finance committee at the owners' meetings. That was the next hurdle. And here they are.
And they still haven't voted on it.
I think Jerry Jones was more optimistic about it, right?
What are the views of the finance committee then? Because Jim Mercer,
shout out JP Finley, asking the question.
Still a lot of work left to do on that deal.
Well, I would anticipate it being done.
Is there a timeline at all?
No, I don't have one, but there is none that I'm aware of. But I don't want to simplify a lot of work, but these are outstandingly qualified owners, and not just. There are a handful of qualified owners here. Certainly the significant ones we read about are very qualified. And that always rules the day on the ruled and cleared with the NFL.
Are you looking forward to getting... Go ahead.
Do you have any concerns on the number of limited... Shout out to Tom Pelissero. I was in his face in there.
Hair's looking great.
Shout out to Will Brinson, name-dropping all of his friends out here.
And I mean,
friends of the podcast.
It's too important to have the right structure for them coming in.
All right. So Jerry and Jim are, I don't know how to even take what they said. They think it'll get done.
It's like ordering an EV right now, okay? How many people are still waiting on their Tesla Cybertruck?
I know I am.
Are you? I'm not saying I am, but like when you start like looking into stuff, we're like, hey, we pushed back the timeline. What is the timeline? We don't really have a timeline. It's like, that's a problem. That probably means that timeline gets getting kicked down the road. And you know what happens in today's society? We're like, all right, I've read the 250 characters. Okay, what's next? Like we just forget about stuff. Like literally... The news cycle, the social media cycle of news and how people absorb things and look to the next thing, they just kind of get tired of like trying to pay attention and being patient to wait on stuff.
What'd you say?
Exactly. So I'm not saying that this won't happen, but and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up because it's happening in other professional sports leagues. The NWSL is expanding, right? The Women's Professional Soccer League. The WNBA is expanding. The Women's Professional Basketball League. And one of the things that you learn and you hear when you're part of these conversations, you're talking to some of the people who are influencers in these leagues, is that they're always looking for the right ownership group. And to find that group, it's difficult because you got to be comprised of the guy who's really rich, who can be the majority owner, and who is the person who's ultimately going to be making the decision, right? But then you've got to comprise the rest of that group of capital you're bringing on. Some are strategic partners. They're people who are there who are going to help you with whatever it may be. It could be marketing. It could be branding. It could be, you know, creating the culture that you want to provide around the facility. Maybe they're going to show up more. Or strategic partners in helping you kind of navigate, whether it's renovations in the stadium, relocating the team, all those things, right? So those are all things that you're looking for as part of that group. And it sounds like, obviously, the Harris Group has that group together, but, you know, they might be setting a new precedent with the amount of people who are involved. Because the NFL is going to be doing background checks of all of those folks. And then obviously the debt limit is something that, especially in today's, I guess today's financial climate, you know, interest rates are really high. And if you're already over a specific amount that's been set there for a reason as a threshold, then you're wondering whether or not this group has the financial wherewithal to be able to keep up with the Joneses as teams continue to kind of, you know, improve their facilities, renovate stadiums, build new stadiums because they want to host Super Bowls and all of that. That all becomes part of the conversation. And obviously, I would imagine the NFL really would like to take advantage of the DMV. That's a huge market. It's the East Coast. There's a lot of influential people there. So I think they want to get this right. And so it's going to take a lot more time than probably Will Brinson thinks.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, I suppose. I mean, I can't say that we're all big Tesla guys or all big debt ceiling limit guys. And, you know, I trust the word of hardworking Americans like Jerry Jones when he tells me that it's going to get done. Dadgummit. Actually, you know why I trust Jerry when he says it's going to get done? Because he wants Dan Snyder the hell out of there. And he's sick and tired of Dan and his closet full of, like, Dan Snyder didn't even have suits in his closet. All he has is like big racks of skeletons. And Jerry Jones wants him out as fast as possible. And I think they will make sure that it gets done.
Well, let's just think about if the deal doesn't get done, what happens to the Commanders? Do they
Jeff Bezos rides that gigantic rocket he built right in there.
What is his rocket called,
like,
again?
I've got all the money. Just go ahead and sell me the team, Mr. Dan Snyder. Like, just go ahead, give it to me and let me do my thing with it. And Jeff Bezos is able to do all the wonderful things that he's done so far in creating Amazon and flying to outer space. And then he's going to have a football team.
I must have missed this episode when you guys talked about the Bezos rocket. I don't recall that.
Are you serious?
Oh, we talked about it for you were here.
Next, what's up next? Let's talk about something. What's up next?
All right, what's up next? DeAndre Hopkins went on the I Am Athlete podcast and he said, Josh Allen is the new age Andrew Luck. His exact quote is, one of my favorite quarterbacks that I've been watching since he came into the league is Josh Allen. He reminds me of a new school Andrew Luck. I love Josh Allen. One, I want to know, Brady, is Josh Allen the new Andrew Luck? And what exactly does that mean? And then I want to talk about something else that D-Hop said about where he'd like to go. So we'll start there.
I don't know. I have no idea what that means. When I watch them, I don't see similarities in their play. You know, I think as far as like overall, just like Super Bowl caliber winning quarterbacks, they're both that. Like a guy who, if Andrew Luck kept playing, Hall of Famer. I think if Josh Allen continues to play and wins a Super Bowl and keeps adding to his resume and wins an MVP, like I think he's capable of being a Hall of Famer, is no doubt. That's kind of where I'd stop. I mean, I think they both have very different styles in which how they go about doing it. I mean, Andrew Luck was a sneaky good athlete. I don't think he got credit for how athletic he was. But I also don't think he was as I don't think he was the type to like want to look to take off and run. You know, when Josh Allen first got into the league, he was very much doing that. You know, Andrew Luck was always more of your kind of cerebral quarterback who's looking to make the right throw, right decision. He'll run if he has to, but he understands that's not necessarily what he wants to be doing. And so there's obviously differences, I think, in the way they play. I think Josh Allen's probably got a stronger arm. Not saying that Luck's arm isn't strong. He had a really strong arm, but it just wasn't Josh Allen strong, which may be the strongest in the NFL. So, I'm not sure what that means, but look, it sounds more than anything else. Look, if that's what you're looking at, I think you're missing the point. I think that's maybe the quarterback that DeAndre Hopkins wouldn't mind trying to go play with because he's putting out a list of what he wants from his quarterback that was out there, which is also something that is a little bit concerning. If you have to put out a list of what you're looking for, then maybe you're already saying that, like, I don't have that right now, right? Like, hey, this is what I'm looking for out of a relationship and you're in a relationship. Well, you're obviously not getting that then in your current one.
Yeah. If we're like, you know what we were looking for in our former professional football analyst to join the podcast. Like, we're really hoping for a guy who played defense, shorter, weak arm, went to a little unheralded public school in college. Just some of those things, you know, maybe like lives in somewhere other than Florida. We're just looking for, not to be specific here, just looking for some things about this guy. I mean, like he would say, DeAndre Hopkins is like, yeah, you know, I just want to go to a franchise with decent ownership and sufficient management. It's like, God, dude, like just
quarterback who loves football. Well,
quarterback who isn't obsessed with Call of Duty. It's like, okay, that was really specific.
I've heard it's a great game. All right. So I'll just kind of just leave it at that. Like, you can't really judge someone unless you played it. I don't play it, so I don't know. The people who do play are like, dude, don't do it. because you will get addicted to it if you start playing Call of Duty. And I'll be honest with you, I feel like I've watched some other people who like took a hard stance against it. They started playing video games. They got themselves addicted. Sure. All right, Sam.
Are you more of a Link Breath of the Wild type of guy?
I was more of a, what was the one? Was it Doom you used to play on your keyboard back in the day? Remember like computer? Yeah. You have those like different guns, you're just killing aliens and stuff. That was probably the last game I really was like, all right, like I need to stop doing this. Like I've got a problem.
I tapped out around Mario Kart, so didn't really get into
Mario Kart. Mario Kart came back though.
I think back on Nintendo 64. That was when Bond came out as a multiplayer game like that. And I would dominate the proximity mines. Like I would just literally plant them everywhere and then hide in the corner.
What do you think? You're some proximity mine unicorn? Everybody did that. People would
die and then they'd pop up again. They'd die again. They'd be like, this stinks. I don't want to play anymore. I'd be like,
well, yeah. And so what would happen is if you knew the levels of GoldenEye that well and you played it that much, and we did, and, you know, I did because that was like the game in high school and college, like when it came out in high school. And you would know where people would pop back up. And so you could drop the proximity mines where people would launch back after they died. And once you got one, you kill your little brother like 32 times in a row. He's slamming the controller. He's like, I hate you, Will. Mom, Dad. It was just good times. Good times.
Such a good game.
Such a good game. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. But okay. So D-Hop wants good ownership, a quarterback who loves the game, and a great defense. Now, of course, that sounds.
You cannot say San Francisco, though.
It sounds like the Bills. By the way, it is San Francisco, but I know that D-Hop isn't going there. But those three things, Brady, you know it too. You know it. You just complimented Jed York and the Niners, so you know that it's good ownership. We've got three quarterbacks who love the game, and you know,
one show talking about the 49ers, just one.
Insane that he's like a quarterback who loves the game, a quarterback who brings everybody on board and pushes not just himself but everybody around him. Like, it is just an absolute slap. Can we just not talk about the Eagles too? Just one show.
Yeah. Okay, but is he talking about the Bills here?
He's just talking crap about Kyler Murray. Is all he's doing. Like
This is the path you go down when you want to not be a part of the team, right? Like, Kyler Murray's under contract. They've got a new head coach. They've got a new general manager. They obviously haven't moved on from Kyler, and they kind of can't because of the contract. So he's there for this year. We don't know what happens after this year, right? And look, that's not saying that, like, Kyler Murray can't turn things around. I mean, we tend to forget the first 3 years he was building towards being that player that, you know, obviously got a second deal, but becoming the player that a lot of people thought he was going to be as number one overall prospect. Last year was a lot of difficult things working on. So I think people should pump the brakes, give him a chance to recover, and we'll see what next year looks like, even though it could be an uphill battle with the roster. All that being said, you know, this is the path that DeAndre Hopkins probably has to take if he wants to move on. And I think he's at the point in time in his career, he's proven how good he is. He's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL when healthy. And he's towards the end where it's like, he wants to go get a ring. You know, he wants to go out there and have a shot at doing it. And I think this is unfortunately either the path that he's chosen to take because he's thought a lot about it, or maybe he's being coached by his agents. I mean, God forbid we ever have agents get involved with messaging and part of the process. But it's the unfortunate reality of how this works if you want to try to get to another team.
What does that do to a locker room, either the locker room that he's in or the locker room that he will be potentially going to, that there is a player who is kind of bad-mouthing his organization and his quarterback trying to get out? Do you look at them differently as a player, or do you just understand that it's the business?
Good question.
No, you understand it's the business part of it, but it definitely is the human nature part where if that's a leader and that's a guy who's got the trust of a lot of the guys in the locker room and he's viewed as a leader – then they're going to be looking at what he's doing and they're going to be saying, uh-oh, like maybe I shouldn't be following this guy or maybe he's not the guy. Yeah. So there's no doubt about it. When you've got a guy who's as accomplished as DeAndre Hopkins is and he's speaking out publicly, it emboldens others to speak out publicly. It emboldens others to be like, I need to get out of here too then because I don't want to be a part of a rebuild or I don't want to be a part of a sinking ship. And as bad as that sounds, the lifespan in the NFL is really short. And a lot of players, as much as you want to play for the team and all that, you're really playing for the name on the back of your jersey. And I know it sounds terrible to say, and you wish that wasn't the case, but that's the truth.
All right. On that note, we are taking a quick break. You're watching Pick Six. We'll be right back.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount+.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Get breaking news.
Big news coming out of the NFL today.
Highlights and instant reactions.
The largest final round comeback in four championship history. We're down to the final four.
I just want to take time to analyze greatness.
Chalk winners and losers with a guy who's already a big winner.
CBS Sports HQ. It's all sports all day long.
Welcome back to the Pick Six Podcast. I'm Katie Mox here with Will Brinson and Brady Quinn. All right, we talked about some ownership issues. Now let's talk about former players as minority owners, because Tom Brady reached a deal to become part owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, which has spawned a bunch of conspiracy theories. How much validity should we put into that?
Big ups to Tommy. Big ups.
Mm-hmm. Went from one Brady to another.
Yeah, I mean, always excited for players when they're able to get in on a deal like this, because it's a great business deal. And here's the only thing that I think it leads my mind to think is the NFL owners are probably going to look at this and they're going to say, okay, we'll let this fly because
Tom Brady's richer than
Mark. No, it's not because that's he never played for the Raiders.
Yeah.
Because the concern is going to be this. Let's say this is Robert Kraft and he was, and then all of a sudden Tom Brady's got minority.
Circumvent the salary cap.
You start to think that maybe there were some promises made to him in order to take less throughout the course of his career, and he's going to be paid on the back end, kind of a wink, little nod deal going on. So I think the NFL owners have to be careful about how this works moving forward, because once one player does it, it's a precedent set, and then a lot of other players who are going to be very wealthy are going to say, well, how much? Is there a threshold? Is there a bar of a minimum investment that you have to put in? Obviously, Brady's made a ton of money, and he's going to make a ton more money, maybe more so broadcasting than playing. But the reality is, too, you know, how is that going to be viewed if it happens to be the team that the player played for? There's a conflict of interest there, and there's going to be a thought that, how do you know this guy, this owner's not going to make it up on the back end for him after he's done playing? Now, granted, you have to be in such a unique scenario, like a Tom Brady, who's arguably the greatest of all time. But I think as we see more players cycle out who are first ballot Hall of Famers, guys who we look at as some of the all-time greats that made a lot of money, because the money's only going up, this could pop up more often than you think.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Tom Brady notably over the course of his lengthy Patriots career from 2001 through 2019, right, took significantly below market deals. So if he were to suddenly get a great deal on a chunk of the Patriots, it would absolutely look like, I don't know if it'd be collusion, but what would the term be, Brady? Like incentivizing, basically you'd be incentivizing Tom Brady to take less to give you a competitive advantage over the salary cap by saying, I will give you a chunk of the team when you retire if this happens and this happens. And so, yeah, like you're not going to get Kyler Murray to do that, you wouldn't think, just to use an example of someone who doesn't care about his team and only cares about Call of Duty. But the, I'm kidding, sorry, Kyler. But the point being is like the Chiefs would be a great example. You know, Clark Hunt could go to Patrick Mahomes and say, Pat, we signed you this 10-year deal. We're restructuring it this offseason. I want you, if you'll take this, this, and this, which is less than what the market value of quarterback contracts are, we'll promise you down the road a chunk of the Chiefs when you retire, you know, because you've already won two Super Bowls with the Chiefs. Yeah, like, to Brady's point, it would take somebody on that type of path to pull it off. But it would be such an issue for the CBA, for such an issue for the salary cap, and for competitive balance. It wouldn't be surprising now that Brady's done this, that maybe this time next year, we see where there's an owner's meeting and they say, you know, the former players may not purchase an ownership stake in
any of the teams they played for.
Yeah. Right? Or like you have to wait 10 years or something like that. Or like you have to buy it from a separate, like, cause if Tom Brady wanted to buy the Patriots from Robert Kraft 10 years from now, I don't know how that would work. You know what I mean? But I agree with you. Like it's,
So this is the hard part is you obviously, if that were the case, right? And I think we all know between Tom Brady's, the wealth that he's built and the money that he probably could put together in order to buy the group if Robert Kraft wanted to sell.
Plus the alimony he's getting from Giselle. This is significant.
Hey.
She's worth more than he is.
I mean, okay.
I don't think that's really happening. But
okay.
Yeah. Plus, I think Florida is a little bit trickier, right? If it's California, maybe. Oh, come on, Brady. Let's get in touch weekly on it.
But let's go down that path, because if there was anyone that Robert Kraft would be willing to sell to, and maybe even at a discount, you'd have to think that it would be Tom Brady. And so if that opportunity presented itself, you'd really have to look at it and say, like, I don't know, maybe it's written within the CBA where that's not necessarily allowed, or it should be written. And so maybe this will spark that conversation, as you kind of pointed on, Will, to not allow it to happen. Like, it's just, you can't have a player who's going to own a stake or be a part of a team that he played for because of that concern.
Is it a little weird that, like, Tom Brady might have to fire Josh McDaniels in a year or two? I mean, that's kind of awkward.
Well, I was more curious because they've got the photo up there of the tuck rule play, the fumble, or at least that's what Jimmy Garoppolo called it when he got there.
Fumble play.
Now that Tom Brady's a part ownership, it's like, hold on, how is this going to work? Like, is he going to come in there and be like, by the way, we're taking, you know, that's going to stay up. Okay. Like, we're not taking that down. That's going to stay up. Or like, even the quarterback room, like, is Garoppolo sitting up front looking at the screen? And then Josh McDaniels is behind him coaching on something, like being like, you know, Tommy didn't do it like this back in New England. You know, this is how Tom saw it and all that. And Tom's like back behind Josh and another.
Josh?
Like, yeah, you know, he's right. You know, Jimmy, this is really how you should be doing this. And if you don't want to do it this way, we're going to have to move on from you. So, yeah.
Tom comes in, he's like, hey, Jim. He's like, it's Jimmy. He's like, listen, Jim. You know how you tried to usurp me in New England and then I got you kicked out of San Francisco and you did okay, but I still did better and then did better in Tampa Bay and all of that. I just want to let you know you've been released and all of your guarantees are gone. So the next time you mess with me, don't. And I'm now the quarterback for the Raiders.
I mean, there's one or two other ways of looking at this. Okay. It's either that it's the ultimate troll job by Tom Brady. Like, he happened to choose the team because he was drafting Jimmy Garoppolo. And whatever transpired in that quarterback room, he's like, I've got so much money. Wherever this guy's at, I'm going to go there, buy a minority stake, and make his life hell. Or quite possibly.
He's trolling Raiders fans?
The greatest duo of a Tom Brady, Jimmy Garoppolo, both single, going out like the greatest wingman
in Vegas.
Whoa.
In Vegas. Like, no one ever saw this coming. Like, both those two good looking quarterbacks.
The hangover part, like 6 through 50. Yeah. It's like,
yep. Go ahead. Maverick and Goose, whatever other tandem you want to talk about, Batman and Robin. It's like, we know who's playing which role, but that would be one hell of a dynamic duo.
Who is Tom Brady Batman? Obviously.
Yes, of course he is.
Yes.
What are you about?
Well, yes, Tom's new on the scene. I think Jimmy's got the lay of the land in Vegas already, pal. I'm just saying, he might be like, hey, Tom, allow me to escort you around and show you the various places. Tom.
The Super Bowl is in Vegas next year. I don't think that we think that the Raiders are going to be there. So the two of them may be trolling around at the Super Bowl, which is exciting for me. Before we get out of here, I want to touch one more hot topic here. Brady, as you know, there was a second round of gambling violations for players, most notably with the Lions. What is your solution or what do you think is going on?
Well, there's another one that's like under, we expect more suspensions coming.
That's coming out here soon. So
they're investigating.
How do they avoid this? It's such a sticky situation because the NFL gets so much money from sports books. And of course they can't be gambling on the NFL, but it's
hypocritical. One, for the NFL to be making as much money as they are off of, you know, these books and maintaining the same gambling policy you've had for forever. Look, I think the NFL and the NFLPA really need to come together and say, we're only hurting ourselves if we're like potentially putting every single NFL player, personnel, everyone at risk if we don't change our policies. And I'm not advocating for them allowing gambling on the NFL. No. Not at all. And not even necessarily in team facilities. Like, I think that's kind of a gray area where, like, if it's May and the dude's betting on a playoff hockey game and he happened to do it from his locker because he was there till 7 p.m., like, are we really that concerned? I mean, I just think they should really allow this conversation to happen where, you're obviously going to have be, you know, restrictive towards anything involving the NFL. Everything else, it's probably fair game. And, you know, look, if these guys want to do it, they're still, they're going to have the ability to do that, even if they wanted to do it, because that's always going to exist no matter what rules, regulations, laws are out there. If people want to get away with illegal stuff, they're going to do it. But they need to look at changing the gambling policies to allow players to do more, with the exception of the NFL.
And I think it's interesting too. So like, let's say hypothetically, Jameson Williams, who's been suspended 6 games for gambling on college football inside an NFL facility. He leaves the facility of the Lions in May. He decides he wants to make a bet on week one, whoever, like, I don't know, Michigan's playing, right? He wants to bet Michigan minus 39 against
Hawaii or someone. Yeah.
Hawaii. Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is. And he gets in his car and he drives out to the stoplight to leave the Lions facility, and he's sitting there waiting, and he decides to place the bet, but he doesn't realize he's still on the Lions Wi-Fi.
Or that, yeah.
Or he's like geographically located on the Lions facility, or he's at home and he tries to put the bet in, and he closes the app and he puts his phone in his pocket and he drives to work and the bet isn't placed, and he opens up the phone and the bet continues to cycle through and gets placed while he's on the Wi-Fi there. And I know that I'm being like a little pedantic here, but the point is like, they are geofencing.
And the problem is, if you turn off your location, right, that's not a part of that bet.
You can't make the bet.
You can't make the bet, but also to your point about the process you just talked about, that process isn't going to kick in. And so it might have your old location.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. Like there's, and like you're required. So the NFL has people working with the sports books. I think they have third party guys, and they have guys within every single one of these legal sports books who, no, like you have to use your real name. You can't register as like blah blah blah. And like as an account, you have to use your real name. So they know these NFL players that have these registered legal sports betting accounts. They can track them. Who gives a crap if you're betting on college football in the team facility? Now, if you're doing it during practice, that's a whole different ball game. That's your coach's issue. Like if you got guys who have got phones out betting on college football, that's one thing. So they just they need to figure out a way. There's just too many
Teams can help that. Because when I go into the studio at CBS, you are blocked from going on any gambling sites. You try to go in on something, you can't.
Which makes
do
total
it.
Sense so, for a sports gambling website.
But hold on. That's through Wi-Fi though, right?
Yeah.
But that's but you think the players are going on, they're obviously logging on to the team Wi-Fi or whatever. But that is at least one step. It's not going to prevent it completely, but if you block them from
so
going
that's
on there.
If they have a cellular connection, it's that would make it kind of irrelevant.
I mean, it's at least one reminder. You're like, oh,
they're trying to help the athlete.
You try to bet it, and it's like that site is blocked by the NFL's gambling team thing firewall. And then if you turn off the Wi-Fi and make the bet anyway, then you probably deserve the 6 games.
Yes. Well, the other thing is like, look. I mean, I played a time where you went back in the offseason in March. There was March Madness. You had pools. You had people. I mean, it happened. Like, we're never condemning that. I mean, are we being serious right now about, where do we draw the line in regards to what we consider gambling and what's not? You know, is it not your fantasy leagues if there's money involved? Is it not the March Madness when you fill out a bracket and people are throwing in money to that? I mean, it's like, at what point do we draw the line with all of this? So I just think they really need to have a good, long, hard conversation about revisiting the gambling policies that are in place, putting in, Katie, as you pointed out, some different measures to try to prevent that. But again, if they want to have a bookie, like, I'm sorry to admit it to people, if this is the truth, they could still go find a bookie. Like, there's legal, people can go buy marijuana in states where it's legalized. Guess what? They still have someone who's selling that's not necessarily legal. Like, it's still
what? Going to the
country. I know, it's crazy. I know it's great to actually rip this on a podcast, but I'm just like, they need to revisit that conversation and not be implementing policies that are decades old at this point.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Brinson, I know you have got to get out of here. So that is going to wrap up our show today. Make sure you join us on Thursday at 1 p.m. for more off-season coverage. And send us your mailbag questions to @PickSixPod on Twitter or any of our individual accounts for an upcoming mailbag episode. We'll see you Thursday.
Yeah. When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.